Hey folks, welcome to another exciting episode of Long Shots, and you must have seen we flipped around a little bit here. This is Sharad Tupran as always, and I'm here with Nikhil Arora. How you doing? Doing fine?
Yeah, all good. All good, and I'm very very excited to, you know, catch up with Avinash from Zaggle.
Yeah, we're very fortunate here today. We have Avinash Godkhindi, CEO and MD at Zaggle. A fintech company focusing on payments, you know, pivoted towards a largely B2B side. We'll obviously hear more on the business, but thanks for your time, Avinash. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Pleasure to be here. Always happy to talk business and always happy to chat with people who are interested in finance and fintech.
Yeah, let's you know, dive right into it, Avinash. I mean, what does Zaggle do? And I know you personally have a lot of experience on the loyalty side of things. And, you know, these are all words that you associate when you just Google search Zaggle. You'll hear loyalty, you'll see rewards, you'll see B2B, SaaS. What exactly is Zaggle and what is the problem statement that you guys are targeting here?
Sure. So if you look at our journey, right, the way we like to describe ourselves, we are a B2B fintech company digitizing spends. Mm-hmm. Okay. At the core of what we do, that's always been the mantra.
Yeah.
How we do it has changed and evolved over years, and I'll be happy to share that with you guys. Right now, if I look at what we offer, we have a unified tech stack with two platform solutions. One is around rewards and loyalty, as you mentioned. The other is around expense management.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with businesses essentially on both the levers. One is to drive growth and revenues through, you know, rewards.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is to manage costs to help them maintain control over their expenses through the expense management platform. So we like to believe that we are able to help businesses on both ends of the spectrum here.
So, you know, like starting from the start, I mean, I was kind of reading about Zaggle and saw that it started with a focus on corporate cards, more B2B to C emphasis. And then I think gradually over time, it kind of expanded into a end-to-end suite of services and obviously much more business facing. So obviously there must have been some sort of a strategic rationale over your journey and perhaps some sort of an inflection point when you decided to, you know, expand into a broader SaaS-based offering. How did it actually pan out?
Well, hindsight is always 2020, right, Nikhil? So I'll tell you what our journey was, and I'll be honest enough that there was a rationale, there was a thought process, there was the market which was driving us to do certain things. And then, you know, we had our fair share of mistakes, right? And I'll be happy to share that as well with you and your audience. So we started off essentially with the thought that how can I digitize rewards?
Right.
Rewards at that time was essentially done where people would either get a bunch of t-shirts or duffel bags or, you know, zippers from their company. And, you know, we had this very interesting anecdote where we had a company, which I would not name, but there was an employee, a tech company, a global MNC tech company. And one of the employees famously went to the HR head's chief people officer's cabin with 33 t-shirts. And said, in the last 2 years, I've got 33 t-shirts from you for okay. various events. And now my family also does not think of these t-shirts as anything great. And I've taken all different sizes so that my uncles and aunts and, you know, nephews and nieces can all wear them. And it's like terrible, right?
Yeah.
So that was sort of an inspiration for us. And to say, you know, why can't I give the choice to the end user,
mm-hmm.
right? Whether it's an employee, whether it's a channel partner, whosoever it is. So that's how Zaggle started to offer choice in a digital way to redeem and, you know, get your rewards. So whether it's a gift card where you can use it in multiple locations, or whether it's reward points that you can redeem for various e-vouchers. In 2011, when we started off, largely vouchers were gift vouchers were physical, but at least you had the choice, right? You could choose to redeem for different brands. So we digitized rewards quite successfully, and then we started to see employees of these companies come back and say, hey, you know, the reward part is digitized. Why is my employee benefit,
mm-hmm.
like the meal allowance, still on paper coupons?
Yeah,
right.
Right. So paper coupons were still very prevalent in 2012, 2013. And so we started to work on digitizing that. And once we were able to do that, then the demand came back is, can we digitize employee reimbursements?
Right.
Right. Along the way, we dabbled with trying to figure out how can we offer better value, more deals, etc. to employees of companies. So we dabbled in restaurant cashbacks. We did some interesting stuff there. We did some interesting stuff around group dining.
Mm-hmm.
All things where we built tremendous capability on the tech side.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I'm thankful that, you know, we tried those things was, it really enabled, for example, one of the piece of technology that we built during the time when we did restaurant cashbacks was the simple concept that, you know, employees could scan the bill that they would go, or employees or even a consumer, right? Any consumer would download the Zaggle app, scan a bill and send it to us. And if it was a kosher bill, we would, you know, be able to process a cashback for it, which was funded by the restaurant. Now, this was a very complex model, collections, a lot of issues. But the tech that we built in terms of OCR, the tech that we built in terms of being creating a seamless experience to be able to scan the bills is something that we even today use in our expense management platform. So a lot of the tech that we built over this time, we are able to reuse those pieces of code very, very effectively. And that has held us in very good stead.
Yeah.
So from there, we... from employee rewards, we then branched into expenses. So, because companies started to say, if you can, for a CFO's office, employee reimbursement is an expense category, and can you start helping me, you know, bring onto the same platform all of my other expenses, whether it's petty cash, whether it's utility bills.
Right.
So think of a company like a insurance company, right, which could have as many as 1,500 offices.
Yeah.
Right. And when you have so many offices, you have so many, you know, admin spocks in each of those branches, petty cashes to be distributed, utility bills to be paid, and you don't know what is the efficiency with which you are able to do it. And this amount itself, Sharad and Nikhil, goes into crores right, for these companies on a monthly basis. So if you're able to bring efficiency there, you're bringing tremendous value.
And
so that's where we are in our journey today. We today work with over 4,000 businesses, largely enterprise customers, but we've started to work a lot on the SME side in the last couple of years. Companies like Tata Steel, Tata Motors, Goodyear, Infosys, Microsoft, Persistent Systems, a whole host of pharma companies, insurance companies, cement companies. So across board, whether it's your, you know, IT, ITA sectors or other industries.
No, that's it's fascinating. And since you're talking about a diverse set of you know, clients or guys who are using the product, I'm sure you're like sitting on very useful data, right? Because you're getting a read through into spending patterns and expense profiles across industries. How do you think about that? I mean, because we did come across AI and the use of data. You know, how do you think about that? Because that's pretty priceless data points, right? To actually get a first-hand view on expense patterns.
Oh, absolutely. And look, when you're able to share that, those insights with companies and businesses, that's where the value really, really gets unlocked, right?
Yeah.
So how are your employees spending their rewards? Where are they, you know, if they are taking clients for a lunch or dinner, how much is each person spending? What is that pattern across time? What is that pattern across different geographies? Those are things which can sound mundane to somebody who's not running a business. But in this pandemic time, especially, Sharad, what's happened is that the last thing we've seen in our customers, at least, but by and large with businesses, is the last thing that businesses want to do is to retrench their employees. And when they're looking at ways and means of saying, okay, how can I manage my expenses? Rather than, you know, retrenching 100 employees, can I figure out ways and means to extract value from my current expense lines, right? There's a lot of, you know, opportunity to be able to optimize there. And those are insights which very clearly come only through data. Those are insights which very clearly come through using AI, using all the, you know, sort of technologies that that are changing the world, to be very honest, right? Whether it's ML, whether it's NLP, all those things really, really make it possible to analyze that kind of data.
But I mean, like, you are kind of, as a business, you are kind of leaning more towards the pure play product end of the spectrum where, you know, you obviously have an all-encompassing dashboard with very analytical, insightful reports coming in from data-driven insights? Or do you also want to go on the solutions end of the things where, you know, you kind of, your team actually sits with your clients and, you know, walks through actionable, like more you know, management consult advisory. Kind of a advisory type of a role?
So we've actually gone through that journey, Nikhil, and one of the reasons why we've started to focus a lot more on startups and SMEs is because we have seen that, you know, our ability to productize and offer a platform, SaaS platform solution is far higher with that audience.
Right.
Anytime we're working with an enterprise customer, obviously the enterprise customer has custom requirements and those custom requirements, while obviously we have been servicing for all these years, does take a tremendous amount of bandwidth and time, right? And when you invest that time, which is good learning, you are building an enterprise-grade software which you can offer to SMEs. But somewhere scalability becomes a bit of a challenge beyond a point when you are only focusing on enterprise. So our mantra today is to look at a platform, a SaaS platform approach. We also have tremendous traction these days in the last probably 6 to 12 months on the partnership side. So we did a massive partnership which is yielding very good results with Visa. We are launching our first business credit card called the Founders Card. The Founders Card is a card which is focusing on the needs of the founders of SMEs and startups. It's a credit product where we are also offering the functionality of, you know, domestic prepaid and forex prepaid. So it's a very interesting construct targeting a very very specific segment.
Right.
So that's the Visa partnership. We just partnered with Yatra.com to offer our platform to a whole host of their enterprise customers. We signed up with a bunch of banks, including DBS. We signed up with Yes Bank, which has always been a partner with us. There are quite a few banks in the pipeline. We have a partnership with WeWork, where our platform is offered to all 60,000 plus startups who occupy WeWork's offices in India. Mm-hmm. So we are seeing that, you know, through a platform productized approach and through partnerships, we are able to take our solutions much quicker and to a much wider audience than, you know, cracking one enterprise at a time.
Yeah. And, you know, you talked about the last 6 to 8 months. Obviously, it's fairly well understood, like, we've been under a COVID-19 influence across businesses. So would you say that, like, the pace of digitization and adoption for companies like Zaggle has really accelerated over this time period?
For sure, on the employee expense management side.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That really accelerated is an understatement. Yeah. While COVID is a really... really a black swan event, nobody planned for it.
Yeah.
It's really a tough time for all of us. But from a business perspective, it's amazing how fast, you know, you're seeing change.
Mm-hmm.
Behavior change is always the toughest problem to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, it's much tougher to solve in enterprises or businesses versus consumers, right?
Yeah.
Because in consumers, you just need to be able to influence one person or one family. Here you need to influence a bunch of people.
Yeah.
But COVID has forced businesses to start digitizing. So I'll give you an example, right? We do a lot of, prepaid cards as a part of our overall solution offering, right? Within rewards, within our employee benefit solution. Pre-COVID, our split of cards was 90% physical, 10% virtual.
Right.
Post-COVID, it's flipped.
Right.
90% is virtual, 10% is physical. And it is just something which we would probably have taken 5 more years to achieve, even though we were pushing. So there are companies like Microsoft, for example, they have banned any physical reward or any physical item that is going to be shipped to their employee.
Right. Yeah.
Simply because they say, we don't know what the, you know, repercussions are, etc., etc. So if you can offer it completely digitally, we are all for it. Otherwise, you know, we're not going to avail of your solution, right? Mm-hmm. So, fortunately for us, we had invested over the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, tremendous amount of time, money, effort, energy in building these digital platforms.
Yeah.
So, as they say, the more harder I worked, the luckier I got. So it's a bit like that, right? We did focus, put our heads down, and invested a lot of time, effort, love in building these platforms, and that started to reap brilliant results for us now.
But I mean, like, what was the initial pitch? You know, like, right, obviously you said that behavior is something which is so difficult to change, especially at an enterprise level. And, you know, obviously from 2011 to now, there has been a fair amount of digitization overall, you know, in terms of, right from telecom to, you know, there are so many external drivers, smartphones, you know, just access to those devices. But in those initial years, how were you kind of pitching Zaggle as a value play? I mean, I'm just kind of interested in understanding that.
It was tough. It was very tough, Nikhil. And, you know, when we started off talking to prospective customers, you know, we didn't even have a solution per se. It was more like, you know, sharing our vision or our thought.
Right.
And people would say, you know, ye kya hai? Matlab, what are you talking of, right? And it was one of those things where you had to find these cohorts of so-called believers, whether it's in possible customers, whether it's in partner merchants, who could actually take a punt and say, let's try this. Let's see if this makes sense, right? So we found a few of those type of partner merchants. We found a few of those customers. We also found, you know, Visa to be a billing partner then. We found RBL Bank, which was then called Ratnakar Bank, as our partner bank in those days. And we were able to create a ecosystem, a cohort of believers, and basically try to see how things work out. But it was tough. It was tough. And we went through our own phases of temptation. Like, for example, 2014, 2015, you wouldn't believe the amount of internal and external pressure we had to do a wallet. Because it seemed like Har Marz Ki Dawa was a wallet, right? Yeah, every problem could have been solved with a wallet. At least that's how the fintech world viewed it. But we frankly never saw the use case beyond a particular level. Honestly, we didn't see a business model there, right? And hence we resisted the temptation to build a wallet solution. And I'm glad we didn't fall for the hype, because UPI has just disrupted the wallet space, and that was sooner or later bound to happen, right? Either in the UPI avatar or a different avatar.
I mean, you know, like, it's super interesting, like, when you were kind of, you know, talking about the payments ecosystem and UPI and how it kind of disrupted the wider, you know, fintech space, and like how now payment players, to start with, I think their strategy was not to have a business model, but just to have a customer acquisition funnel. But now that with UPI, where, you know, kind of cost to end customer has kind of become irrelevant as a factor with the backend infrastructure coming in, now the next step for most of the payment players is to actually cross-sell and distribute, you know, be it mutual funds, be it insurance products, and, you know, kind of become a distribution funnel for underwriters, right? And I mean, and like, but when we kind of, you know, kind of stretch that in case of a company like Zaggle, like, even like in your case, I like, you come from a credit card kind of lineage, right? I was kind of, when I was going through a bit about the company, I also saw that obviously you have great visibility in on the cost center side of things for companies. So I think there was also a bit of blurb on how you're looking at, you know, credit as a product category, right? I mean, be it working cap, financing. And so are you looking at credit from an underwriting perspective at some point in time, or mainly as a technology partner?
Absolutely. See, when you're sitting, the way we look at it, Nikhil, is that payments gives you tremendous amount of data. Okay. Now, what you do with that data is completely up to you. Of course, within the boundaries of GDPR and privacy and, you know, consent. But what you can do with that is really, really where the magic happens, right? And credit is basically taking that whole data and generating real-time insights and making business decisions. So today, over the course of last 8, 9, 10 years, we've built this whole engine which churns out tremendous amount of data and analytics, right? Now is the time for us to take it to the next level, which is to say, okay, I have this engine. How can I start using this data to start making intelligent decisions And one of the biggest places where you can make a decision and make a difference in your customer's life is to be able to give access to credit. Because a lot of the lending that has happened in India, especially on the SME side, has been very, very conservative and balance sheet driven. Whereas the model, which really, really should be the way it should be and the way it is going to be, is going to be basis your cash flows and, you know, real-time data analysis. Because a business today in 2020 is not the same the way it was in 1985 or even 1995 or 2000 or 2005, right? Where there was the pace of change in the world was much slower. So a balance sheet which looked in a particular way 6 months ago was likely to look similar after 6 months. But today, 6 months is like, you know, almost a lifetime. Right? A business could have looked brilliant in 6 months ago, and especially COVID has taught us that. Right? In 6 months, the same business could actually have completely collapsed. So being able to access data at real time on a daily basis, and to be able to use that to make lending decisions, is where the real value is to our customers, and is where, you know, the world is moving towards as well. I would actually venture to say it is already moved. Right? So definitely being able to underwrite in the future is something that we are working towards. But, you know, we are a company and we are a set of entrepreneurs who believe in a very logical and deliberate way of building this whole enterprise, right?
Yeah.
So we have built the data trove, we have built an engine which is generating a lot of data. How do we go to the next step where possibly we are not lending on our own, but offering access to credit through a variety of, you know, schemes, variety of, you know, programs. And then we are eventually in the next few years going to be able to start lending from our own end.
So that is definitely something on the cards, right?
And how do you...
Absolutely.
How do you see the regulatory angle around that? Because it's been sort of a quite challenged discussion, right, of virtual banking licenses and things like that. Is that something you're comfortable with?
So, look, I think it's if you want to lend, you have to be an NBFC,
yeah,
very clearly, or yeah, you have to be a bank. There are no two ways about it. So, eventually, we'll look at, you know, either partnering, acquiring, or, you know, some sort of a form of an NBFC license.
Yeah.
I think overall, the regulation is also evolving. So we've seen some very interesting changes or pivots in the recent years, where there is now the regulator has opened up the ecosystem and said, look, you could create your own network, essentially, right? Which has come in very, very recently. So who knows how the regulators are also, as essentially RBI, is going to evolve over the next 2 years with vis-a-vis lending. I wouldn't be surprised if there is a lot more willingness from the regulator to allow different fintechs to experiment when it comes to lending with certain boundary conditions. Right? So you're seeing a lot of lending that has happened historically, which is like, you know, large ticket size lending with, you know, some very not so nice consequences. So I think there's no harm in allowing a certain restricted amount of lending where, you know, you are allowed to experiment.
Yeah.
I think the RBI sandbox also will help in being able to try some of those things.
Yeah.
But I mean, to be fair, like me and Sharad, we often, like in addition to Transfin, we also have a financial advisory business. And one of the things that we often kind of notice on the balance sheet of our clients is that working cap is such a big, it's a gaping hole, right, for most of the guys. And especially like unsecured working cap or, you know, something secured even on receivables. I mean, just the mechanics of it is something which is too much for a bank to handle. And I guess that's where, a data driven platform,
yeah,
like Zaggle probably, you know, has a significant edge.
And the fact that you guys are B2B, it automatically puts you in a slightly advantageous position than the other B2C plays out there, right?
Absolutely. See, I honestly believe as India evolves, you're going to see a lot of people who are, and that's happening world over, right? The gig economy is really taking precedence. The COVID has really accelerated that phenomena as well. So you're going to see a lot of people who are going to be intrapreneurs, right? Not necessarily wanting to build the next unicorn or whatever that is, but create businesses for themselves, for their families. And it could be that, you know, you're just still require capital. You just can't turn around and say that a business does not require capital.
Yeah.
So how do you cater to that segment? How do you engage with that segment? That's something which is going to become extremely crucial in the coming years, because you cannot have a country which is hoping to grow at the pace at which we are hoping and yet say that everything has to come from large enterprises.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. It has to come from bottoms up. Right.
But you know, like if I like, kind of try to be a devil's advocate here, I mean, fintech is also one of now the most crowded domains, right? Like in every product category, you have 30 different options. I mean, there are lots of niches. There's a lot of question of penetration or under penetration. I mean, on the regulatory front, there was an era when as we were talking about wallets, everybody was talking about it, and then something like UPI came, which kind of cross cannibalized half the sector. Then the government comes up with their own app, which is again kind of doesn't make a lot of sense. That okay, are you in the business of setting up infrastructure, or are you in the business of actually entering the business and being a market provider yourself? So it's a super fascinating domain, but it's also being such a kind of the next goldmine of sorts, which every investor, every VC is watching. There's a lot of noise also coming in, right?
Absolutely. See, fintech has always been that kind of a space. I think there are very few spaces which have remained so hot for so long. And fintech is one space, because inherently I have a hypothesis about this. The reason why fintech is so quote-unquote hot, because a lot of the VCs and PEs are, MBAs from places like Chicago Booth and others, where they'll just love numbers and they love finance, and a lot of them are XI bankers, right? And when they see something cool happening happening in the finance space,
this is definitely the right room to have this conversation.
So there is a natural affinity that the institutional investors have towards finance and fintech, right? It's like a second homecoming. They understand it well, they can relate to it, they get excited about it. So fintech is a space which is going to stay hot for the foreseeable future, because your pattern of VCs and PEs is not going to change. It's going to be the same McKinsey's and the same business schools and the same iBanks who are going to work as a conduit to build your VCP factory, right? Yes. So obviously that janta is going to always be excited about fintech. So that's my hypothesis in an open forum. This is the first time I'm sharing it, so I hope I don't get hammered for this. But and also I think it's good. It's fintech as an industry is lucky, because at least you get, like in showbiz, they say all news is good news, blah, blah, blah. So in the same way with fintech, at least you are relevant. It may be that, you are always under the shadow of regulation and, the impact of regulation, but that comes with the lay of land. So I won't switch. 20 years almost now in payments and fintech, I won't change that for anything else. And I don't see that changing anytime soon, for the reason that I mentioned, right?
And someone like you, you obviously have a very interesting vantage point towards both the finance side and the technology end of the spectrum. And that way it was very refreshing when we were talking about, your appetite to kind of enter lending yourself as an underwriter, and you kind of gave an emphatic yes. I mean, that kind of shows your own finance lineage, right? That, underwriting is where the real fun is, effectively, right? I mean, that's where you're looking at the net interest margin, and, just being a pure play distributor or having a pure play tech play is obviously very powerful. But I mean, that kind of becomes interesting only once a certain scale is hit, which in the Indian context is always a complicated story. So might as well be a crafty lender and take things forward. So that obviously was something quite fascinating.
See,
for me,
what happens is that if you have the ability or the belief that yes, eventually you will be able to do something like lending, it's complex. Lending is very complex, but that's where a lot of value is also there. One of the early things that I learned in my career was, do not shy away from complex problems. Because when you actually get down to solving those complex problems, you might be able to actually unlock tremendous amount of value, right? simple hai to sabhi karenge, right? And then it becomes commoditized. Yeah. Once it's very simple, everybody is going to be chasing that, and then it's a very simple game. So complexity is something which should have a certain degree of value, and lending definitely has. And I think more and more companies in India as well are going to realize that pure only tech has its own limitations, right? Then you have to be able to create such a brilliant platform that you are able to take that absolutely global, right? And you know, you are able to create a platform which is going to be the market leader worldwide, which is also a good way of thinking. And that's not something that we necessarily have, you know, given up on.
Yeah,
because we believe the platforms that we've built are essentially platforms that have every possibility to really get traction globally. But we aspire to do more than that.
Yeah, and that's I was about to get to that. So what is the, you know, near-term growth focus? I know like you guys have offices in London and Toronto, if I'm not mistaken. Is global growth a real priority right now?
Global growth is a priority. Global growth was a much bigger priority pre-pandemic because one of the things, Sharad, what happens is that when you're trying to set up these offices and businesses, whether we like it or not, take the case of Toronto, right? Toronto is a very relationship, Canada is a very relationship-driven market, unlike probably the US. That's what, you know, our experience tells us. And you need to go there, spend some time as principals of the company and engage with the ecosystem. Before you can really forge those partnerships.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there is a logical limitation to how much you can do on a Zoom call or a VC. And one of those is to be able to actually go to a new geography and expand your business. We have found that probably in a business like ours, it requires a certain degree of in-country presence for a certain time at least. And then you probably have a team that you build there. So we've taken a step back because of the pandemic. But once hopefully the vaccine comes out, maybe end of this year, early next year, who knows? We are committed to our global expansion strategy.
Yeah, no. And your characterization of Toronto is fairly on spot. I, you know, spent 8 years there, so I fairly well tuned with the local dynamics there. And are there any global or domestic companies that you sort of look up to, or you call them as comps, if you will? I mean, things that people are doing which fascinate you. I mean, let's leave the underwriting part because that's like the next leg. But even on a straight up, you know, SaaS tech platform who's tackling the same problem.
There are a couple of companies in the US. One of them obviously is a company called Brex, which does some very interesting stuff. Essentially, it's a marriage of being able to lend to startups and you know, offer a very, very curated rewards program. So that's something that we found very much. It's a couple of Brazilians, very young Brazilians who've started up that company, and it's already NASDAQ listed. So Brex is one. Blue Wine is another. Blue Wine actually is a French venture AL, another Booth Allen, in a similar space. So those are the kind of companies that we do find very interesting, given what they're doing. They're in a space which is a convergence of neobanking, where we are building a platform and lending, and they are marrying rewards and expense management there. So it's sort of the kind of space that we are working towards as well.
Yeah.
So those are the companies that come to my mind straight off the bat.
Yeah. Oh, right. Interesting. And sorry, just wanted to get your experience on the funding journey so far as well.
It was exactly where I was heading.
Yeah. So how's I think you guys managed to you know, tap in the VC markets, and how's that experience been? And yeah, and if you're comfortable talking, would like to hear you know, in terms of business profile, like EBITDA positive, net income positive, cash flow positive, how are things trending? And depending on your comfort level and whatever is publicly comfortable for you, but how's that journey been?
Yeah, I think one thing which I believe, Sarah, is it's an open world, right?
Yeah.
I mean, whether I tell you whether we are EBITDA positive or not, it takes you know, somebody with a little bit of you know, entrepreneurial bent of mind to go to the registrar of companies and figure out what your balance sheet and P&L is. So it's an open world today. And so we are EBITDA positive today.
Yeah.
Last week we closed EBITDA positive. We have seen post-pandemic our growth just skyrocket. So God has been kind. So that is where we are on the business side. It's growing pretty well, and we are hoping to clock much, much better numbers this year. We already are close to our last year number, March 5. So that's good. VC journey, we've had our own interesting experiences. We have a couple of institutional investors on our cap table, and we haven't, to be very honest, raised truckloads of money in Zagle. We've largely been very frugal and very capital efficient, and probably we wanted to get our moat, we wanted to get our story right. It's taken us a while to be able to figure out what really we would believe is something that would work. But I think we are today at that stage that, you know, we could confidently say that, yeah, we know what we're doing and we know what we're not doing, right? I think the second part is actually a lot more important. So I would be very honest, a few years ago, if a VC said, yeah, are you doing this? I would say, yeah, kind of, you know, sort of. We are actually doing that also a little bit in this particular. So today we are in that position to turn around and say, no, this is not something we are doing, right? If you ask me, are we doing something around new banking for millennials and B2C? No, I'm not, right? I'm not doing that. And there are very clear reasons why we are not doing it, right? So I think we are at that stage where we know how to approach this whole game. When we raise capital, it will be for a very clear purpose as to how we are going to deploy that capital, for what purpose, and then take it forward, rather than just raising money to be able to fund working capital.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Ending things on a very refreshing and prudent note seems like, you know, from an underwriting perspective, that would also take you a far distance, wouldn't it? But no, thank you so much, Avinash. This has been. Hope this was an interesting chat for you. It definitely was for us. And thanks for sharing your journey with Zagle, and how you're viewing both the subsector of Zagle as well as the wider fintech space, and how you see market forces and consumer behavior change in COVID. These are exceptional times, but it's always very educational for us to talk to someone who's been in it. We also come from the iBanking universe, unfortunately, so we kind of obviously have looked at these things more through research reports as well as through spreadsheets, but obviously you sit on a conference, so it's great to have this chat, and
lovely chatting, guys. Always enjoy these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a good way to sign off. And so this is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran
signing off.